Welcome back to Open Line on WOSU 820. I'm Charlene Brown. This hour, we're going to be talking about community gardens where you can grow your own food, as well as how to get locally grown produce even if you don't have your own garden. My guests are Bill Dawson, coordinator of the Franklin Park Conservatory's Growing to Green program, Trish Denbostel, senior manager of a nonprofit called Local Matters, and Kojo Ababio, owner of the New Harvest Cafe in the Linden area. Welcome, all of you. First question, why should we get into growing at least some of our own food, Bill?
Well, number one, it's fun. It's actually fun to produce what you eat. So, to start a garden, whether it's in your backyard or in your community, you're growing recipes. You're growing the food that you like.
What are the benefits of doing that?
Oh, my gosh. The benefits go on and on, especially within community gardens, because you're really changing neighborhoods by putting in gardens in inner city neighborhoods, suburban neighborhoods. It doesn't matter where. You're bringing families together. You're working with children. You're working with seniors. That's one of my favorite things to see in the garden is when all three generations come together, because we don't see that enough anymore. We're all so busy. And we have to glean what we can from our seniors, because they're full of information. And, you know, they know exactly how to do things, and they love to tell you how to do things and how hard it was for them. But when you can bring them all together and have three generations out there working in the garden, it's fabulous.
Some of those seniors probably remember something about a statistic that I read. In 1943, 44% of all the vegetables that were eaten in the U.S. were produced in home victory gardens, and 20 million American families worked in gardens, in addition to one-fifth of the population living on farms. Trish, you're kind of trying to get people back to that as well.
We are. Well, we're working with collaborations and partnerships just to increase the access to healthy foods, and so it makes sense to continue working with Bill and Kojo and all the different neighborhoods, tying it together.
And you do this all over the community, all over, is it Columbus, Franklin County? How widely do you range?
Well, we're a new program, but we're working throughout Central Ohio. And right now, one of the programs that I work with is in Columbus Public Schools and the MRDD schools doing nutrition. And it incorporates an edible garden at the schools.
And Kojo, you've made a business out of making sure people get good nutrition, right, at the New Harvest Cafe?
Oh, absolutely. I want to say good morning to you, Charlene. It's
a pleasure
being here. Yes, we have opened up a lot behind New Harvest, and we're growing food that's going straight from the garden right into the kitchen. So it's great when you know where your food source is coming from, and you're growing it right out in the back. So, you know, we've expanded our garden in the rear of our building. We started with a small plot. Now we have close to about a half acre right behind us. So, and we kind of use a different type of technique in growing food. We grow stuff in tires, anything that we recycle or refurbish in the community. And now we're doing research now on hair, in which we are taking hair because it has nitrates and it's excellent for increasing the nitrogen in soil. So we're doing some research with Ohio State University to use hair in gardening. So
are you guys raiding the local barbershops
we've established
for fertilizer?
Well, I mean, it's twofold. You're establishing a relationship with some of the barbers, and if you want to have conversations in terms of what's going on in terms of the community, all that happens in the barbershop. So we're reestablishing some relationships with the barbers at the same time. They're donating their hair to us so we can use it as fertilizer in the garden.
That is really innovative. Bill, is that the kind of thing that Growing to Green encourages?
Absolutely. We look at all types of methods of growing your own food and fertilizers and composting, especially, you know, reuse and recycle. Absolutely. We've used hair more as a pest deterrent,
right?
Because hair, it has the human scent, and that will help keep away the critters from the garden.
Is that something new, or has that been around for
centuries?
That
has been around, and hair does have some, ingredients things in it that will actually have fertilizer, mm-hmm. and same as feathers and other things that you can use in composting.
That's fascinating. Some of us who have not been gardening very long would not have known that without you guys being here to tell us that. Trish, how do you get people involved in a community garden?
You know, I'm telling you, over the past couple of years, it's become easier and easier. There's such a new surge in the movement. We have something called the Columbus Community Gardening Blogspot. It's something that actually Bill authors on, and it's been a great way to bring all of the gardens together. And everyone that I get, I also refer to Bill's Growing to Green program, and we just work together. But as I said, the interest is huge in the communities.
Bill, let's back up a little bit and explain what is a community garden and how do you get going?
A community garden is basically when you get people coming together to garden together in within their neighborhood. So typically when someone comes to me and says, Bill, I want to start a garden in my neighborhood, you know, I usually look behind them and say, who's with you? You know, you can't do it alone.
That's right.
You really need a core group. And then I really ask a series of questions about land. Do you have land? If they don't have land, we help them find it, either through the City of Columbus Land Bank, through private owners, through churches, schools. There's a lot of land in Columbus, a lot of abandoned lots in Columbus that we want to beautify and make productive and help change that face of the neighborhood through this. So, and then typically, the next question is, do you have money? Do you have a budget? And that answer is almost always no.
Right.
I don't. But it's, you know, we get a core group together. We start working with them. Then we teach them how to widen that circle, widen that group through volunteers, through community residents. We don't want to go into a neighborhood and sort of build it and they will come. We want the neighborhood input. We want the community input on what that garden could look like, should look like, and what kind of programming might be involved in that garden as well.
Say you have a group of neighbors and you all get together and decide we're going to have a community garden.
Yes.
We really want to do this. Maybe you purchase some seed. You have your tools and all of that. Can you just go out and pick a spot and start gardening?
Well, basically you have to get permission of that land owner, whether it is the City of Columbus, whether it is a private developer or private landowner. And sometimes it's hard to do to find that absentee landlord or that owner of the property. But we work with them to find that owner, to get the permissions. And typically we try to go for a long-term lease. It's, you don't want to build a garden and next year they develop it. But what we've found, Charlene, is that we build a community garden within a neighborhood that actually spurs economic development in the neighborhood.
Just having a garden.
Having the garden there.
Right.
We've built gardens that are completely surrounded by either abandoned lots or boarded up houses. The next thing you know is that landlord now is fixing up and rehabbing that house because now it can be rented out because it's a, there's a beautiful place there. It's safe. The children are playing in the spot. We've had to physically remove some bad element from some of these abandoned lots and sort of push them out, and they've gone on to the next dark abandoned alleyway or abandoned lot, and that's where we're going next. But we concentrate on this lot and revitalize it actually through gardening. So it does. It adds beauty. It adds, you know, an alternative for children to play, a safe place to play and learn where their food comes from. And then, you know, neighbors who maybe live across the street from each other and have never really met. They wave occasionally and they've never really met. Pretty soon they're leaning over the garden fence and sharing recipes and stories and you know, other things. Other people who may not garden are involved in the garden as well. They'll take their children over and sit and read a book. They will, if they don't garden, I know that they spend a lot of time on their front porch. They'll be our garden guardian. They'll look out for the garden. They'll give us a call or give someone a call if there's, you know, bad activities going on. So it really does change, and those houses get rehabbed. New builds have gone in. So we've seen where just putting in a garden in a neighborhood can really change.
It sounds like the story of Ganther's Place on the south side.
Absolutely.
That's exactly what happened there. Mm-hmm. There was a vacant lot.
Yes.
And someone living next to it decided, you know, we can do better than this.
Mm-hmm. They actually purchased that lot, and they've got some grants. We worked with them on several grants along with Keep Columbus Beautiful, and they it turned that into a beautiful little parkette, small park. And now it seems like there's a friendly competition going on all throughout that Southside neighborhood of, well, they've planted flowers, now I've got to plant flowers, and it moves on down the block.
It's contagious. Our discussion is about community gardens. If you'd like to join the conversation, call us at 292-8513 or email openline@wosu.org. Kojo, you said you have a garden, an acre now, adjacent to your restaurant. Is that one a community garden, or do you, your family, your employees work that yourselves, and it's really not a community garden?
No, it's a community garden. One thing that we do in that garden is that we work with juveniles who are involved in the penal system. So those who have to do community service hours come out and work in the garden. So we take a third, we cook, we take a third, we give away, and then we sell some of it. So it kind of helps to recycle dollars back into the garden. The other thing is that a lot of the elder in our community, we have this food co-op. So they're looking forward to, you know, the season when we start to harvest some of these fresh fruits and vegetables. So they come down and really purchase and support what we're trying to do in the community. But one of the biggest things that we're doing now is working with juveniles who are involved in the penal system and kind of allowing them to learn a little bit about gardening. And it's an alternative as opposed to getting involved in violence. So
this how does gardening actually benefit them?
This is a nonprofit.
I'm sure a lot of people have a hard time picturing, quote unquote, juvenile delinquents tilling the garden.
Well, I think what happens is that they see the ownership. When they can see it go from the seed and now becoming a full-blown vegetable, and they're going, wow, I had something to do with this. So,
and Trish is sitting there shaking her head. You recognize this phenomenon.
Well, I worked for teens for several years at Godman Guild in the Wineland Park neighborhood, and they actually came to me thinking that they were coming just for a job,
right.
And I had them. So it was community gardening was – it was obviously more than gardening. It was a way to work on relating to each other, working on their employment skills, but it really speeds things up when you're working in the sun. And then by the end of the summer, I really saw some changes.
It's amazing the effect it can have on you. It's very calming, I think, too, being in a garden.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. It's serenity. It, you know, take out your aggression by pulling those weeds. A good feeling of accomplishment. And Kojo's absolutely right, and Trish, that these youth, teens, it's a good time to really pull them into the garden. We've seen that they've actually, you know, done their community service. But, hey, Bill, we've planted a seed over there. We planted this plant. We kind of want to come back and see what's happening with that. Can we volunteer beyond our time?
And so, children are sometimes the first that will come to your garden, and then the parents will follow. So they bring that home, and that's really exciting.
So the children actually influence the parents to start participating in the garden?
Certainly.
Absolutely. Yeah. And their diet. And Trish can talk, you know, about this you know, our diet, our health and wellness. That's one of the biggest benefits of gardening is it's good exercise. You're out in the sun. You're gaining that vitamin D. But what you're producing is fresh. It's local. You know what's on it. You know what's in it. Mm-hmm. And it's good for your body. And so that's one of our biggest, you know, goals is to have people eating healthier and, you know, taking care of childhood obesity and diabetes and things that are afflicting our neighborhoods. This is important.
And Trish, your organization, Local Matters, also makes sure that some of that produce gets out in the community. How do you go about doing that?
Well, we help with some of those resources, but one of the things that we've been doing lately is just, like I said, I think it's all about collaboration. We don't do anything without looking to see if someone else is already doing it, and then we create partnerships, that's what community gardening is about. Mm-hmm. Local Matters has a veggie van that is, instead of ice cream, we go around to different neighborhoods that do not have a grocery store close by and have the veggie van for fresh local produce.
And people buy produce off your veggie van?
They do, and we accept food stamps. So it's pretty accessible for people, and it's a fun way to get the fresh produce into the neighborhoods.
That's a huge service because there are neighborhoods that just don't have any kind of grocery store, or if they have a store at all, it sells little or no fresh produce, and what they have may be very poor quality.
That's right.
And well, that's been a big issue, and we've been meeting with Representative Carlton Weddington, who he has a big big issue with a lot of the local grocery stores who sell just alcohol, tobacco, and processed foods. So his whole thing is that how do we create production sites so that we can try and encourage people to get involved in community gardens? So we're actually starting a whole initiative with urban farming. And he's really pushing his thing and trying to find dollars to support this initiative. So, it's, you know, it's becoming contagious now, you know. And I think not only just urban gardening and urban farming, people want to live longer and eat healthier. So people are starting to see the benefits of eating fresh produce, especially when it comes right out of the garden.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a call. We have John on the line. John, you're on open line. What's your question?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. What a great panel. Local celebrities in the local food movement.
Thank you.
My name is John, and I'm a chef, cook, chief bottle washer. I just want to throw out a challenge to other cooks and chefs. Really, we have kind of our finger on the pulse of what people like to eat, but at the same time, we get to explore and use some of this. You know, I'm a long-time supporter of the local movement. I just want to challenge other people who have the finger on the purse strings for purchasing some stuff. I mean, this is the height of the season, and you know, planning for next year's crop is always just as exciting. And working with community gardens to actually purchase for, you know, highlighting on a menu.
Okay, John, let's let our panel comment on
that. That's great, John. You know, thank you for that. And it's so great that you're using local and food. Do you have a garden at your restaurant or room for one?
I have a second lot at my house where I'm fortunate to it keeps getting bigger every year.
That's just one of the biggest ways to advertise what you're doing and your support of the movement, and by buying off of community gardeners, by buying from local and from people who are growing their own food, enables them and actually gives them seed money for next year and supports their cause. So thank you for that.
All right, John, thanks so much for calling.
Thank you.
Talk more about that, because I know there are restaurants in the area, in addition to the New Harvest Cafe, where Kojo is growing his own produce to use in the restaurant. There are others around the area that do purchase produce that is grown in community gardens.
Liz Lesner is someone that comes to mind immediately, who owns Betty's Tip Top and Surly Girl, and we've been working with her for years. She's very supportive of community gardening and local foods, and I know that that's spreading. Local Matters is actually, within the next month, going to put a local foods guide out on our webpage that actually will show the different restaurants that support community gardening and local foods and purchase from the gardeners.
And let's give our listeners that webpage.
It's www.local-matters.org.
Okay.
And also in the Linden area, Bandadar is one of the restaurants that purchases a lot of our chives and green onions. And when the season is in for cabbage, they would purchase a lot of caliente. So we deal with a lot of Somalians in our community in purchasing some of our local produce. So, and that's a good thing, because we're establishing a relationship with an indigenous culture. So we're really trying to really move forward in collaborating with them to open up a production site.
Hopefully. So you want the Somali community to become part of the gardening effort?
Oh, they're already a part of it.
If you're a community, you're part of it.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
You need to know what your community eats. If you're growing a bunch of food items that they don't eat, then you're missing the point.
And so what else do you grow?
Oregano. We have rosemary. We have lots of parsley coming up right now. We got a lot of chives right now. So, John, if you need chives, give me a call.
That's the New Harvest Cafe, yeah, John.
green onions. We have a lot of stuff that's coming up right now. A lot of herbs right now. If you need oregano, we have tons of it. Rosemary and things of that nature.
So you work cooperatively with other restaurants that are interested in ingredients or produce that
Absolutely.
You're growing?
Absolutely. Yeah. And they can come out and cut it out themselves.
More and more restaurants are, you know, certainly using local. The message is out there. The message is clear. Your tomato typically comes 1,500 miles away.
That's true.
And so it's so good for the environment just to choose local, to grow local, to buy local, that our food comes from so far away a lot of times. And that food that you're buying doesn't always taste like it does straight out of the garden because it's bred to ship and store longer.
And talk more about the effects of purchasing produce from far away versus purchasing the local produce. What's the benefit of buying from closer to home?
Number one is taste. Mm-hmm. Number one is taste, freshness, because it's right off the vine. It's right out of the garden. It's less than a day away. And so when you're buying from, you know, Florida or other states.
Or other countries.
Other countries. It takes a while to get here. And so the freshness and knowing what's on it and in it. Certainly you wash your produce before you eat it, but what is on it? And if you're growing it or you have a relationship with a local farmer or a local community gardener, you know what's going on in that produce.
And Trish, you had more to say on that subject too.
Well, Local Matters has a partnership with the Greener Grocer, and we support Ohio farmers. I was just thinking we have a farmer's market that's year-round. But to me, when I think about buying local, I think there's the taste, but there's also you're putting your money back into your community. Mm-hmm. You're supporting your Ohio farmers. We're not supporting California.
Mm-hmm. Even though we love California.
We do. We love it.
We love all the states.
Yes.
Let's take a call. Now we have, let's see, Tom on the line. Tom, you have a question?
Oh, hello. Good morning.
Good morning.
How you doing? I'm standing out here with my garden. My tomatoes are growing here.
Well, that's good.
Don't forget to mention Rife's Market in Grandview and also Black Creek Bistro up there in
delicious.
By Main Street. They're doing a lot of cool stuff. Anyway, I work as a freelance reporter here in Columbus. I had a question about the environmental and social issues that pertain to local foods, but I think Kojo and Bill started mentioning it, and maybe they can say more about that. And also on top of that, another layer would be what people can do to connect their involvement with community gardening with advocacy on the policy level, because community gardening is great on the ground level, but I think there are some agricultural policies that take place in terms of our government that might need to be changed if we're gonna promote local foods a lot more.
Okay, good question. Mm-hmm. What about that?
Well, dealing with the social issue, I think that when we look in the inner cities, we see that there's a lot of division in terms of how people socialize and more or less how I'm not going to say government, but how the system has really isolated people from being involved in the process of being socialized. So I think what gardening offers is that people then start to rebuild relationships, and I think that gardening kind of allows that dialogue to kind of happen. The other thing is that when you're working with youth who are involved in the penal system, now you got them involved in gardening. It's really trying to educate them about the importance of socializing and re-socializing and establishing these relationships. So what's happening is you start to see that in poor communities, inner city, they're being isolated. It seems like there's not a lot of resources that are coming down to the community. So what happens is that people start to more or less form their own movements in a nonviolent way. And I think that one thing that we do is we have done guerrilla gardening in terms of taking over lots, but at the same time, it's in a nonviolent way. It's a nonviolent progressive action type move. And it teaches us that sometimes instead of sitting around waiting on somebody to do something, you need to get out and do it for yourself. So on the other hand, on the agricultural piece, I think that the laws in terms of those who can get resources, you know, you have to have, I'm not sure, is it 5 acres or more in order to reap benefits from the Department of Agriculture. But what's happening with Carlton Weddington, he's trying to push legislation so that we can start to support smaller urban farms and get resources through the Department of Agriculture to support some of these initiatives. So there's a lot of talk about how we change legislation so that, you know, it's even across the board in terms of how finances and resources are distributed. So, you know, I appreciate the call and kind of bringing up that point. And I think there are some serious social and legislative issues that need to be brought to the table and really try and change some of these, modify them so that it can kind of retrofit the inner city so that we can also reap some of the benefits of that.
All right. Our discussion today, my guests are Bill Dawson of Growing to Green, Trish Denbostel of Local Matters, and Kojo Ababio of the New Harvest Cafe on community gardens. This is Open Line on WOSU 820. I'm Charlene Brown.
Yorm Kaukonen has been playing the guitar for decades, so he must know hundreds of tunes, right?
Well, as you can see, because I have a songbook in front of me, I have at my fingertips lots of songs, many of which I remember without any memory aids and some of which require a little memory jogging.
Following the fingertips of Yorm Kaukonen next time on Bob Edwards Weekend from PRI, Public Radio International.
Bob Edwards Weekend comes your way tomorrow afternoon starting at 2 o'clock right here on WOSU 820. In the weather forecast for Central Ohio, mostly cloudy today, a slight chance of showers, but that's diminishing even as we speak. High today about 75 degrees. Tonight, some clouds and an overnight low of 58 degrees. Then on Saturday, some sunshine. Tomorrow's high 78 and ditto for Sunday. Some sunshine and again, a high of 78 degrees is expected. Right now, we have 66 degrees at our studios here on the Ohio State University campus. WOSU Public Media provides the community with quality programming, and you enjoy it every day. But, frankly, the current economy threatens our ability to fulfill that commitment, and case in point, we must raise $500,000 by June the 30th. We're more than halfway to the goal, but we do need your help. Please call 1-866-897-9678, or you can go online if you choose to WOSU.org and make your contribution today. Either way, we thank you very much because your gift does make a difference.
Welcome back to Open Line. I'm Charlene Brown. Our guests today are all experts on community gardens and growing your own food. We have Bill Dawson from the Franklin Park Conservatory's Growing to Green program, Trish Denbossel from Local Matters, a local nonprofit that deals with locally grown food and distribution, and we have Kojo Ababio, owner of the New Harvest Cafe in the Linden area, where he grows the food that you eat in that restaurant. There have been some really good questions about the broader issues involved with community gardening, and that also brings up the question of local farmers and how we can patronize them. Trish, can you talk about the relationship that Local Matters has with farmers in the area and getting that the good locally grown produce to us?
Yeah, Local Matters has a partnership with our for-profit sister, the Greener Grocer, and we work with Ohio farmers to work with distribution. We have the farmers market, and then also working with not only with the Ohio farmers, but even when it comes to community gardeners, about what is it that you can grow that people want to buy. There are a lot of economic opportunities with that.
And Kojo, you were also commenting on this because we mentioned the restaurants, mm-hmm. Yours being one of them, and how you take advantage of what you grow as well as exchanging with others.
And the other thing is that I think we have to try and focus on larger production sites. And so collaborating mm-hmm. with churches and working with business owners kind of allows them to get involved. So it's so important that we try and establish some relationships with business owners and churches so that we can expand this initiative and get people really to understand why is it so important that we try and create sustainable production sites. It's not about a garden this season. We're talking about over 10 to 20 years, and then our children starts to kind of take ownership of this thing. So it's all about, you know, the stewardship and passing the mantle so that we can move forward and do some other things like rebuild the community, especially on the inner city. So.
And this is really about a lifestyle.
Oh, it has to be a lifestyle. And there's no other way that we can do this. We come from old farmers and sharecroppers, you know, so we have a lot of them in our community. We have a lot of experts, old-time farmers in our community. There's a gentleman down on Winding Hills right off of Westerville Road. He has some of the best collard greens. I mean, he grows some of the best cabbage out there, and he's been doing it for more than 15 years. And I was surprised at the number of old-time farmers we have in our community who have just small plots in their backyard. So these are the real experts, and how do we get them more involved in this whole initiative?
And our discussion is on community gardening. If you'd like to join in, call us at 292-8513, or you can email openline@wosu.org. When you're trying to get started on a community garden, there's lots of other issues besides what to grow and mm-hmm. where to grow it. Mm-hmm. You also have to think about things like weed control mm-hmm. and how to get water there. What do mm-hmm. you do about those mm-hmm. things?
Well, water is critical for a garden. You know that. Any gardener knows that. You need water to grow your garden. So there's many ways we look at it. Certainly when we're first looking at a garden and looking at the site, we're looking at all the things, you know, and soil testing as well, because you go into these lots or areas, if you don't know the history of it, you want to test that soil and see what might be there, good or bad.
And that's one of the things Growing to Green helps with?
Absolutely. We'll point them in the direction of soil testing. Growing to Green will come out and do a site evaluation, take a look at the site. We'll stand out there and just see which way the sun shines. And so we know we're getting the correct amount of sunshine in the garden. We'll look at the nearest available water source. If there isn't one, we'll talk about water conservation and rain barrels and collecting water, either through a cistern or rain barrels, that kind of thing, so you have the water. Typically, someone will share the water in the area, but sometimes there's just not access, so you have to look at that. And it also teaches you about water conservation. And then you have to look at so many other factors. Sometimes vandalism can be a problem, and we've come up with a lot of different ways to deal with that. One, signage, just talking about the garden and the benefits it's providing helps inhibit that. Sometimes we've gone as far as putting an extra plot out front that says, if you must pick, pick from this one, or weed a little, take a little. Those kind of things that encourage people to get involved in the garden, not just walk by and pick a few tomatoes.
And that actually works?
It actually does. It actually does. It's a great recruiting tool to get more volunteers interested in the garden, because a lot of the folks, you know, that might be taking don't have the means. Mm-hmm. And so that is another big issue. Many, almost all of the gardens, Kojo talked about the third rule. We're growing gardens to donate to the needy. Many of these, almost all of the gardens, are growing an extra row for the hungry.
Oh, yeah.
Growing extra. They're supplying fresh produce to the food banks, to the food pantries, to the soup kitchens, that for folks who don't have the means, may not even have the food stamps to buy at the farmers market. So there's food accessibility, getting the food out there to them through farmers markets and other things. But then there's the giveaway. The you always have extra. You know, your mind is bigger than your garden, so you grow extra and you give it away. You give it to the food pantries and get that produce where it's needed most.
Do you just show up with it and hand it over to them? Is there some organized way to
get? We actually work with the food pantries, and we go in before the season starts and say, what would you like us to grow? Because they, you know, they don't want the perishables, the strawberries, the raspberries. I eat most of those anyway. But the potatoes, the onions, the things like that. Or if it is a soup kitchen, you can take the fresh greens and those things in that they'll put on the plate that day or the very next day. And so that's providing a whole new base of good, healthy food that need it most.
And what about things like canning or freezing or preserving? Do you also talk about that, Trish?
Actually, we have an urban farmers market. I've been waiting to mention that because I'm so excited about it. Bill came out. It was great. The next one is on July 25th, but there's an educational component, and we're going to do canning classes and all sorts of ways that people can – once you grow the food, I think the other important thing is what do you do with it, how to stagger the planting, how to be smart about what you're growing, and I think that's really important.
Yeah, some of us have had the experience of having a beautiful garden and then having not a clue what to do with what comes out of it, especially when it comes to things like herbs. They're beautiful,
right?
Just as decorative plants. Mm-hmm. But you forget you can take that, and there are ways that you can preserve it and have those herbs and things all year round.
We've taken our collard greens and frozen them. So we bag them up and we freeze them and give them away. We're working with ECDI now to try and develop some type of way of canning and processing our collard greens so that we can make it available to some of the local grocery stores. So, they're the Economic Development, ECDI, Economic Community Development and Corporation or something.
Okay, so this really has a ripple effect. You start small plot and it can mushroom, pardon the pun, into many, many other things.
There's entrepreneurial efforts all over through these community gardens, not only teen employment, youth employment, but some are creating products. that are coming out of these gardens. And Charlene, you may not have been to the conservatory in a little while. And if you've looked at the southeast corner of the park,
we are
building a four-acre community garden campus education center that will have rentable plots. It will have culinary gardens. It will have meditation gardens, health and wellness gardens. But the biggest part of that is it's going to be an education center where not only community gardeners, but backyard gardeners, school field trips, all of that will be coming to that campus every day for educational opportunities just that you just spoke of, the canning, the freezing, the preserving the harvest, how to become a community gardener, how to become a neighborhood leader in your neighborhood through these gardening. All the efforts that we're talking about here will be taught on a daily basis at that campus.
And there's a beautiful display in the conservatory in the Palm House?
In the atrium.
In the atrium that is about the new campus that's
yes.
being built, so you can see what's going to be coming there, as well as watching the progress of it out in that corner of the property. When is it going to open?
The dedication, very easy to remember, is 999. So this year, September 9th, that campus will be dedicated, and there's a whole weekend around that, dedication Wednesday evening. Thursday evening is the Growing Green Awards, and I know you've been to those awards and seen the community feeling that happens around those awards. It's a community potluck, and the gardeners all bring in great dishes straight from the garden. And then Franklin Park Conservatory recognizes all those great gardens and gardeners that are out there. And then just after that, it was a Friday evening, is a field-to-table dinner celebration, a big event there on campus. And then the entire weekend, Saturday and Sunday, we'll have vendors and educational opportunities and a huge open house, all centered around the opening of the community garden campus in the center.
One thing you mentioned, Bill, rentable plots. What is the cost normally to belong to a community garden? Because I know sometimes you do have to pay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the gardens that I belong to, they're close to 12 now in the university area where I've lived for many years, are all free, and we strive to try and keep them free. So we do fundraisers. We use all of the profits from our urban farmers markets to then pool that money and then help new gardens get started. So we strive to do that, but there are sometimes a cost.
Mm-hmm. And typically, that's how you build in sustainability.
Right.
If you're giving away the plot, you're asking in return some maintenance, some, you know, a certain number of hours per week or per month in the garden. That's built in sustainability. If you've got 30 gardeners, so they're giving you 5 hours a week or a month, that's a lot of hours going towards the garden. There's your maintenance plan.
And Kojo, what about your garden? Is it free or do you charge people to come in and grow?
Well, we have an outside plot that's outside of the garden, which we rent out. So, and it's about 10 by, I'd say about 30, and it's $50 a season. So, and what we do, we help to de-weed it and we'll water it for you. All they have to do is put the plants in.
Okay. We have a question on the line from Corey. Corey, you're on Open Line. What's your question?
Well, I actually just wanted to thank your guests for being on, and I just wanted to bring a couple of resources to the table if I could. First of all, talking about restaurants in the area that kind of give back and grow their own produce. Cafe Bella's on High Street, I know, is one that's doing that. They've given 400 pounds of produce to needy families in the last few months. Another one is Dragonfly. They have it's a vegan restaurant in town, and they have a garden out back. The woman who designed that, Jennifer Bartley, she wrote a great book on gardening, designing a kitchen garden, which is called Designing the New Kitchen Garden. And then last resource that I wanted to bring up was Gaia's Garden, which is by Toby Hemingway. And it's a great resource on permaculture and sort of taking back the land and making it something that is very sustainable and very edible. So that's all I had. But thank you guys very much for doing what you're doing.
Thank you.
Well,
thank
Corey, thanks so much for calling in. We appreciate you taking the time to share that information mm-hmm. with us. Mm-hmm. And we also have an email here. Robin says, St. John Lutheran Church has put in a community garden new this year in their open field next to the church, It's at 6135 Rings Road. Mm-hmm. We have not filled all of the 15 by 20 foot plots that we have tilled, and you can call the garden manager at the church office. They're asking $10 per plot. That goes to what you were talking about, Trish, that if you start a community garden and you want sustainability, a good thing to do is to establish it near a church or a community organization of some sort that's going to be there.
Yeah, get to know the business owner or the person who's in charge there and start a relationship with them and with the community. And it really, if you have the land, you have water, and you have that relationship, it's definitely going to increase your sustainability.
Mm-hmm. And absolutely, the last few years have been the year of the church gardens. They have popped up everywhere. Churches are utilizing the gardens not only for a lot of – most churches have pantries or serve pantries, and so that is a main goal, but it's also outreach. They're finding new members to their fold through gardening and youth programs, senior programs that they typically hold at the church now have an outlet, an avenue to have activities in the garden as well. So many, many, many church gardens have really begun in the last 3 or 4 years. Also, the school gardens. We haven't talked much about school gardens, but there's such an important component. And school gardens can be tricky, one, because, you know, the high season is during the summer months when kids are out. But we're always looking for ways to engage our youth during the summer months. We're always looking for ways to engage parents in school activities. So if we can get the garden started during the school year, form garden clubs and form a community garden through that too, where the community can come in during the summer months. What better way is the kids plant the garden, then you walk in and you sort of take care of it or take over that garden during the summer months. And then when the kids come back, they're not disappointed or frustrated with a bed full of weeds. They have this luscious garden going that they helped start, and it's a learning lab. Absolutely. Every subject can be taught throughout a garden. Reading, writing, math, arithmetic, art. All those subjects can be highlighted and taught through gardening.
Not to mention that when it's snack time, you can just reach over and maybe pick some cherry tomatoes and eat them on the spot.
That is a huge component of getting fresh, healthy food into our schools. And that is a way to teach them. Certainly this one garden at the school is not going to feed the entire population of the school, but it is teaching the entire population that you can eat fresh and healthy through gardening.
And let's take another call. This is Robin. You are on Open Line. How are you doing, Robin?
Pretty good. Yes, I'm the one that sent in that email about our brand new church-connected community garden. And I just wanted to talk a little bit about the soil there, because I gardened there back when I didn't live by the property, before they built the new sanctuary that this garden is next to. And it's on the floodplain of the Kramer Run, and it is so deep and so rich. There's like a foot and a half of topsoil before you get to subsoil.
You're lucky.
Oh, that's fantastic.
That's nice.
And that was the year that my husband worked for Livingston Seed, and we probably planted about 100 different varieties there. It was more than we could keep up with not living at the property, so I don't advise going that far. But it was a very educational experience, because I took records and found out that I like green arrow peas better than I like other varieties.
Okay. All right, Robin, let our guests comment on that for you. Thanks for calling.
Oh, well, Robin, you're so right. Soil is so important.
Oh, yeah.
And as I talked about soil testing, you're very lucky, especially in Dublin. I mean, in a lot of areas, Upper Arlington, Dublin, you dig down, you know, 6 inches, 2 inches, and you're hitting shale or limestone. Sometimes in the gardens themselves, in the city neighborhoods, you don't know what you're going to find. And so typically you have to do a good cleanup of that property first and then do the soil test. Always, always look back and see if you can find the history of that land. More than likely, there wasn't a nuclear power plant there, but there very well could have been a gas station or a house that had lead paint that was buried on site or remnants of that. A lot of times, lots are used as a sort of junkyard, and people work on their cars over there, and you find batteries. So it's really important to know that soil. And you're right, a garden never ends. You're always learning. You're always discovering new things. So thanks for the comments.
Something else that I know people can do when they don't have a large space, what about container gardening? Yeah, can you grow vegetables other than maybe small herbs?
I do at home. You know, here you would think I have this big lush farm at my house, and I do live a little bit in the country, but I also have black walnut trees. And black walnut trees have jugulone in their roots, and they affect everything in the tomato, potato, pepper family. So I grow most of mine in containers or raised beds. And so I have three raised beds off my patio that I grow more than enough for my family, and then containers wherever I can find one. And those containers are sometimes fun and whimsical, whether it's an old wheelbarrow, an old wash tub, or, you know, an ornate container. And you can certainly grow in containers. Sometimes it's easier because you can move that container into the sun a little bit longer, put it on wheels and roll it around your patio. But absolutely, people in condos, small apartments that don't have a lot of room but they have a balcony, try it, grow it, put something out there in a container, or get involved in a community garden that where you can grow on a plot in your neighborhood.
About how many people, Trish, does it take to get a community garden going?
I usually suggest, well, I guess it depends on the dynamics. I do a little bit of, you know, questioning. I usually go out and meet the people on the site. I think it takes some leadership. It takes someone who really is going to be on point for the communication, for making sure that people are coming. And then I would say 2 to 3 more people at least. And I always suggest for people to start a little smaller. I know I've made that mistake a couple of times of starting big, and you can break your back. But I wanted to comment, too, back on what you were just talking about. I think something that I've really appreciated lately is I've seen less annual flowers and all sorts of things that people have in their yards, and more food. Mm-hmm. Edible landscaping. I've noticed in alleys and in front yards and in all different spots, people are starting to say, you know, food is beautiful and I can grow this there.
I've seen some just gorgeous gardens. Growing to Green has a lot of the different gardens that I've visited, and they're absolutely gorgeous. Sometimes they have flowers, ornamental flowers in between, but if you put the right combinations of things together, it's beautiful to look at.
And art.
Yes.
Art is important. Yes. I really have been encouraging a lot of my community gardens to have murals or painting or sculpture there. It's important for it to be beautiful. It doesn't have to just be utility.
And Kojo, you mentioned earlier that you have lots of found objects, objects in your garden.
Well, like we grow foods out of the tires. And the youth have painted the tires and put symbols all over the tires. Also, Wally Walt Neal has painted a huge mural in the garden. Mm-hmm. So the entire location is art. You know, there's paintings all over the place. Plus, we're doing an art display on the 6th of youth and their art. So
June 6th?
It's June 6th. So it's a multi-use space.
Your planners, your whiskey barrel planners.
Oh, yeah. Plus, we put whiskey barrel planners out with Ndinkra symbols that talks about various things. And the Ndinkra symbols come out of Ghana, West Africa.
And these are actually like, what's the word I'm looking for? Not hieroglyphs. What's the word?
Ndinkra
symbols. They're just symbols, like letters, pictures.
Well, and symbols, right.
Yeah.
And they speak to justice, respect, and love in the community. So we're trying to put a very positive energy in the community by putting these planters out there, growing nice flowers so that people can see something as opposed to just trash going up and down the street. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of encouraging and getting people to more or less kind of support some of the things that we're trying to do at the same time, getting them more involved and staying involved in beautification.
Yeah, Columbus is a multicultural city. It's becoming more and more so with more immigrant populations here. We have great opportunities to learn about different cultures. Kojo has taught me a lot. Trish has taught me a lot. Many of the gardeners out there have taught me a lot, and I hope I've taught them things
well.
Absolutely. And so it just crosses that culture, and food is culture. Culture is food.
And I think it's good to know that once you start gardening, even if you're a beginner, there's somebody who knows a little bit more than you, and they will help you.
Share.
You then learn from them, and you can pass that on to the next person. So you don't have to feel like, I can't do this just because it's something you've never tried before. Mm-hmm. Somebody will be out there who can give you some pointers, show you how it's done, even help you with it.
And that's really the intention of the Growing to Green program, is to be that resource out there and to network all these folks together, to bring them together to share and share their knowledge, share their successes, share their failures, so they can learn from each other and come together and be successful.
Okay, let's take a call. We have Joe. You are on open line. Hello, are you there?
Hello.
Hi, you're on open line. You have a question for our guest?
Yes, I have a suggestion. I've been gardening in the urban areas for the last 15 years using the wading tools that we can get any shop, because for the area that we get in a wading pool and the price.
Are you talking about the little wading pools that children would splash around in?
Mm-hmm. I moved to Columbus only 1.5 years ago, but last year I convinced my church, Ascension Lutheran Church on Morse Road, to allow me to take part of their lawn, and we have about 25 containers there. And this year I convinced the Faith Mission Men's Shelter to have container garden. The reason I go for container garden is, as your guest pointed out, we don't know what has been thrown in the ground there, and instead of going for to all the soil testing and other things, we can buy the topsoil or get it from reliable sources and make our own growing medium. And I did it in the rooftops also. That is another area, resource or asset that we are not utilizing for urban gardening. In Chicago, on the top of a garage, 7th floor garage, I set up a garden with containers. And if I may give my website, you can go and see the pictures. My website is www.technologyforthepoor.com.
All right, Joe. We're going to have to let our guest comment on that. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That is a fantastic project.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen, you know, a lot of people doing what they call asphalt gardening. It's where they're actually growing on top of the asphalt and you know, in parking lots and on rooftops and really where if there's any available growing space in those containers that you talked about, whether it's wading pools, whether it's, you know, recycled materials and growing. And more restaurants are looking up and looking at what they have above them and seeing if there's that extra space to grow. One, you're closer to the sun. You're out there. You get the elements and everything. So it's an opportunity, as well as if you don't have land, you can grow in containers. You can look at those resources to grow your food in those.
It sounds like the only limitation is your own imagination.
There you go.
Yeah.
One of the things that I wanted to comment on is also the initiative and the leadership that some businesses and churches are taking to share their land and actually give back to the community. Mm-hmm. I know Xenos on 4th Street, they offer their space for free to us to have our urban farmers markets. Years ago, I had Church of the Master out in Westerville. They helped us build a stage, a mural, a shed, and they're really taking the time to have some of their mission work here in our area rather than going into another country.
That's
and I just want to say thanks because I think it's really important.
That's a great point about volunteerism in the gardens themselves. Many, many groups, you know, work through Growing to Green and through these other organizations that, you know, they want to do some service. They want to do some learning, some service learning opportunities. So whether it's high schools, elementary schools, corporations, you know, have care days and other things where they want to get their employees out. And it's a obvious choice is to work in your own community or work in a community in need. And so that's an opportunity for them to sign on to volunteer for a few hours, a few days in a community garden.
Okay, get people going in whatever way and wherever you can. Let's take another call. This is Justin. Hi, you're on open line.
Hello, thank you very much for taking my call. I just wanted to ask your panel. Lately, I've been doing a lot of research and have actively been using aquaponics gardening. around. I have a couple systems, one at a friend's house and one in my backyard, where we're not only growing produce, but we're growing tilapia and yellow perch. And particularly for an urban setting, I think that this would just be an amazing tool for people. You talked about container gardening and gardening on rooftops. I haven't seen very much of this at all in Ohio, and it's huge in other places in around the country, and particularly in Australia.
Okay, Justin, we're running out of time. We need to let our guests say something quickly about that, okay?
Thank you very much.
And there, thanks for calling.
Justin, I'm sure you probably looked into Will Allen's Growing Power.
Yeah, Growing Power, yeah.
And so if you haven't, look into that in Wisconsin. And, you know, people are doing that, and that is a trend, and I think you'll see it move into Ohio in a bigger way.
Right.
And we're also, hopefully next year, we'll be putting in some aqua fisheries in the Linden area. We're trying to kind of get some land so that we can start that process. So,
Things are just expanding by leaps and bounds all over this community. All right. We've been talking about community gardening and how to get your hands on some locally grown produce. This has been Open Line on WOSU. My guests have been Bill Dawson from the Franklin Park Conservatory, Trish Denbossel from Local Matters, and Kojo Ababio, owner of the New Harvest Cafe. Streaming on the web at WOSU.org. WOSU 820 NPR News.